We are joined by Sergeant Alan Lynch, retired, on by phone. I'm hoping he's there. Are you there, Alan?
Yes, I am.
Very good. Thank you, sir, again for calling in with us today.
And my pleasure.
And you are a Congressional Medical... Yeah, medical. Congressional Medal of Honor winner. That's quite an honor. Very, very difficult to get. Talk to us about that day. From what I read in your bio information, withering ground fire, you saved three of your comrades' lives. That's incredible.
Oh, it was just something that happened. And, you know, you're trained in the military that you never leave your wounded. And I think that what happened that day was just the culmination of a lot of training and, you know, being in the military where you're with people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they put their life in your hands and you put your life in their hands. And we came under this fire. It was, you know, I just did what I was trained to do and what I had to do to not to leave the guys behind.
Did you ever sit back after, I mean, during the incident, you're running on pure adrenaline. You're not concerned about anything but the job at hand. But did you sit back and say, oh, my God, was I nuts to do that? Did that ever occur to you on a quiet night?
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was, in a way, it's embarrassing. But when we finally got medevaced after, I think we're out pinned down for about 4 hours, we were strafed by our own jets, which is really a wonderful experience not to have.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he came in. I looked up and I counted. I could count the rivets in his wings, and he released napalm right over our position. He was flying treetop level, and I thought we were done. Now, there was that thing with speed and distance and all that stuff, and the napalm actually hit about 50 meters away, and then rolled a few times before it exploded. So we could feel the heat. Not enough to burn us, but enough to make us go, oh boy. And after that, they called an artillery on us about three times. And after all of these airstrikes and artillery and all of this, not to mention the Viet Cong trying to sneak up on us, and we could hear them talking. We get out of all of this stuff. I got all the guys back, and I break down. And so they medevaced us all, and they took the wounded guys, and they put them in one tent. They gave me a little white pill and put me in another tent. And then one of our officers came in and picked me up and fed me mass quantities of adult beverages. And late the next day, I woke up.
It sounds like you had one hell of a day.
Yeah, I think the stress of just trying to maintain, because they were, you know, the Viet Cong and the NVA were so close to us, we could hear them talking.
Yeah, they must have been like 20, 30 feet away.
Well, we were behind a bamboo hedgerow, and if you know bamboo, it grows real tight and close together. And so we were like right on the other side of this row in a ditch, and... you know, so we could hear them talking, and we'd stick our 16s through and put them on rock and roll and automatic and just kind of,
dissuade them
until they shut up.
Yeah. Were you concerned about running out of ammunition? I mean, it sounds like you were there a long time without much backup.
No, actually, we had gotten resupplied. In our unit, it was kind of like you carried as much as you wanted. I had about probably 30 magazines of M16 ammunition plus a... It didn't do me much good, but I had 150 rounds of M60 ammunition. I had like six frags. Then I had a few bandoliers that I carried. When I first got to Vietnam, I asked, you know, how much ammunition we could carry. And they said, well, how scared are you? And I said, I'm pretty scared. He said, well, carry a lot. So
yeah.
I did.
Wow. Sure came in handy that day.
Oh, boy.
Now, have you had any contact with the guys? I'm hoping they all survived.
As far as I know, they did. I had contact with one of the guys. In fact, it really tore me up. For many years, I had found out that he lost his arm. And I only remember that he didn't receive much of a wound in it. I think it was he got popped with a carbine because it was just a kind of a little hole, as I remember. But I dressed it, and I couldn't remember whether I put a tourniquet on it, which I wouldn't do, but I couldn't get it out of my head. And so for many years, and he lost his arm. For many years, I would go between, did I do it or did I not do it? Is it my fault? Is it? And then he contacted me about 10 years ago, and we chatted a little bit, and I found out what they did is they shot him with a dirty bullet.
Oh, Okay, so he got an infection.
Yeah. The Viet Cong were really good at, you know, with the punji stakes using feces, and
right.
they would take their bullets and put them in the same thing. The idea being that, you know, I can, a wounded man takes three or four people to take care of.
Exactly. And, you know, and they're patient. They were patient, so they'll wait.
Yeah.
Alan, you went out under the field of fire three times, 50 yards or 50 meters of open ground through what the report says, withering hail of enemy fire. As you were rescuing your comrades, were you concerned with the bullets that you had to be hearing going by you at the time?
I wasn't even thinking about it.
It was just like, get out of there now.
You were just grabbing and going.
Yeah, it was pretty much it. I didn't even hear the bullets. You know, they said withering hail, and I was like, all I could remember was I was grabbing people and putting them in this ditch.
And you went through all that, and you did not get wounded?
Not one scratch. Well, closest I came, we got one of the jets that came on a bomb and strafing run. He dropped a bomb on the other side of the hedgerow, and a great big piece of shrapnel landed on my leg. So we had gotten resupplied. We had plenty of ammunition, and I had cigarettes, but I had no lighter. And so I tried to light my cigarette off of the spent piece of shrapnel, which was pretty hot because it had burned through my, you know, it was burning my legs. I figured, you know, I can pick it up and I'll light a cigarette off, which I don't smoke, and I haven't smoked for 40 years. But back then, I kind of wanted a cigarette really bad.
I can imagine.
I can imagine.
You must have been on an adrenaline rush the entire 4 hours, practically. You've got, your senses are heightened. You just don't know what's going to happen next.
And especially with the artillery coming in, and some of that stuff hit pretty close, you know, and I still had a ringing in my ears for it. I have a hard time. I went to an air show in Iowa, and as we were pulling up to it, this jet come screaming over the top of us and kind of set me off, because the last time that happened, they were dropping bad things and strafing us. So I still have problems with loud noises and
kind of thing. I can understand that. And people sneaking up behind you is not a good idea either.
Yeah, the place I'm staying is a senior home my daughter-in-law works for, and they got us a room here in Highlands at Mahler Park. And the owner, I was his guest, and I'm sitting down in their library, and he come walking up, and I didn't know he was there, and he kind of, Alan, and I practically jumped out of the chair.
I can believe that. Well, I want to thank you, sir, for your service to this country, and we're going to be right back with you, if you don't mind hanging on.
Well, that would be great.
All right. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is Hot Start on EAA Radio.